This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's all-female current affairs and topic program. Co-hosting with me tonight are the lovely Tess and Nicola. Welcome.
Hi Sue, how are you going?
Oh, good.
Good evening.
You've had a haircut too, I've just realised.
Yes, we've both gone the chop similar times in the year. How funny.
It's spring.
Coming into, spring and summer.
It's
much
time.
Lighter.
Feel better, don't
still
you?
Still a bit chilly on the neck though.
I know, but you know, hey, look, we look great. If we had webcam, we could show everybody, but could you just let us everybody know how great we are?
Well, I should describe it. It's very short, very choppy, lovely.
Generally, we just look just absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, very funky new hairdos.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Tonight, we are very excited because we're talking to Anne Hunter. She's the co-founder and current secretary of PolyVic, Melbourne's polyamorous community. Now, Anne has one partner of 16 years and another of 4 years, and in addition to a few lovely occasional lovers and many deep, intimate, non-sexual relationships, she's going to be explaining some of the fundamental concepts associated with polygamy, things like swinging and cheating and boundaries.
Very interesting. Looking forward to that one.
I know. Tess and Nicola go, Now, what's happening in lesbian land?
Well, I found a very interesting story last night about the Lebanon's online lesbian magazine. Lebanon. Online lesbian magazine. Now, I'm not sure about the pronunciation of this, but I'm inclined to say Beisus.
Lots
but
of people, I'm sure they're going to pull you up on it.
Let me know how rubbish I am. Has been relaunched online after being pulled down for around about a year. They launched in 2008. Obviously, a huge step for the Arabic community of Lebanon. But now, and for some reason the website was pulled down, but they're back again, which is great. And it's a really interesting site because it doesn't seem to sit very heavily on sort of news items. They're just personal stories, little blog postings, poetry, all those sorts of things. Things that you wouldn't think would normally make up an Australian news site of any sort.
You know what I think's interesting? That so many of these sites, when they put them up, are actually hosted within the countries. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that they don't have expat Lebanese in another part of the world hosting the site rather than people in the country, because you can see how it was. I mean, it's actually still illegal. Homosexuality is still illegal in Lebanon, though apparently it's a bit more cool with it than some of its neighbours.
They're saying Lebanon is the most forward thinking of the Arab nations, visually I get that. I guess that's a stereotypical view I've got from the media that's been given to me, is that women are not given that leeway, that women are put down and all that sort of stuff. So it's an interesting concept. And if it was really looking at supporting lesbian, then why would that have been taken offline?
Yeah, look, I'm sure that they're very much like sitting on the boundary of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. It's quite interesting to see that the majority of the content in the site is actually written in English, not Arabic. So I'm not sure if that has some part to play.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's an accessibility thing. I don't know, that people will go off and learn English so they can go to a lesbian site, or whether. That is really quite unusual.
And there are about 700 people that are signed up to the site. And again, I don't know if that's because they're uncomfortable to acknowledge that they're actually part of the website, or if it is just still very, very small and unheard of. And yeah, interesting one, but wonderful that there is now a space where women in the Arabic world can
fantastic. Come together and all power to them.
Well, yeah, actually, and it kind of relates into our second story as well, which was one you found, actually, Sue, about a lesbian magazine in Beijing being raided by the police.
Yeah, this magazine was kept underground for quite a long time, and I guess somebody found out where it was, and they went in and raided it when the publishers were out at the Copenhagen Games. Pretty sad to think that magazines like this are being raided and everything was confiscated. It's pretty disgusting, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's kind of nuts. I suppose China, though, they actually, the government own the publications, or you've got to get a license from the government for a publication, and they're hardly going to give one to a gay or lesbian magazine. But, I mean, what a tough break for the people in those countries. I mean, if you think about it this way, I mean, we're so lucky in Melbourne to have Joy. We've got magazines, but you couldn't have a newspaper, you know, you can't have a gay magazine or newspaper, clearly. You can't have gay radio. You can't have the internet. You can't put gay sites on the internet because the internet's even censored. And, you know, I don't think you'd feel particularly comfortable about making overt gestures about your sexuality.
Well, we were trying to think of actually how people in China, the billions of people that live in China, how they actually, you know, find the community within the Chinese community as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, do they have secret handshakes or do you, like, you know,
little maybe cheek taps as they approach one another and
see if someone taps back, like, you know.
There has to be a way, because otherwise it'd be just too insular, wouldn't it? You'd have these little subset communities of gay and lesbian GLBTIQ people and nobody connecting. But the government still are saying, no, we're not allowing, like you said, that they're not allowing particular, I guess, genres to be publicised in any way. That's just pretty nasty, isn't it?
Yeah, I do wonder if it would also go some way to helping them stem the birth rate, as they're so keen to do as well, you know, if they actually let people be gay rather than automatically thrown into marriage at a particular age.
Forcing them into heterosexuality that might cause them to, you know, just try and bring children into the family to hold the family together when they're actually gay. Oh,
I think we've got it all worked out.
I think we do.
Maybe we should seek an audience with the Chinese government.
Oh, I'll do that tomorrow.
Sure, they'd love to hear
from us. I'll let you know.
Sorted.
I've tried finding John Howard, but he's a bit unavailable.
Oh,
so maybe he could talk to them for us on our behalf. Not.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say. Now, our third story is actually quite an interesting one from the Times in the UK. And it's about online dating for lesbians. Now, the author of this story, basically, single lesbian, 45, decided to give a few different options of dating a try and write a bit of a story about it. But in her finding, she found that lesbians were just as likely to lie as men online.
Oh, she's a bit of a cynic, really. I mean, it's completely an opinion piece. We should say that up front.
Yeah.
But it is, you know, just nice to acknowledge that people around the world, you know, large publications are writing about lesbian issues and online dating. Lesbian dating.
I think it's fantastic. I don't have a problem with online lesbian dating. And it connects women. They have forums you can meet. Okay, you've got the whole lying, you know, people that don't look like their photos, you meet them, you go, that's not you. And you realise it is, it's just taken in 1927. But the fact that this woman actually calls women who are on these sites weirdos, I find really offensive.
I think it was actually her friends when she said, oh, I'm going to go and try online dating, her mates all went, oh, it's just going to be full of weirdos.
Yeah.
It's so the perception, isn't it?
It's not.
I know so many people that are on Gaydar Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Or Pink Sofa. Like, you know, there's so many people that are on there for making social friends as much as anything else. It's just a different way of meeting people. Because let's be honest, you go to nightclubs, everyone stands around the outside of the room and kind of looks at each other. They might dance with their mates a little bit.
They're the Velcro lesbians.
Yeah, no one really seems to. You don't actually see that many people just going, hey.
And you do. Yeah, no, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, so you can see why being online actually is probably a much better way of getting to know someone rather than, trying to shout above the music.
Yeah, exactly. Put you in an online space, you are pretty much guaranteed that everyone in that online space is lesbian. Or, you know, if they pretend and that makes them happy, you're probably never going to meet anyway. So where does the lie really actually affect you?
Yeah. But is it a lie when you're just saying, you know, you're putting your best foot forward and you're making things sound better? Is that really lying?
What, like putting a photo of your arm or something?
Well, if you're putting a really good photo on a really good day that was taken a year ago as opposed to, you know, you look like crap now, you wouldn't put that photo on, would you?
Exactly. You wouldn't put a photo of you looking like every day, right, you know, end of the day, just finished work. Oh, somebody took a happy snap of me. Gross. Not going to happen.
Not
going to
happen.
No.
What she was saying, though, was more to do with, like, the embellishments that people say. So someone said they had an exciting job in travel and it really meant motorbike courier. And so on and so forth. So maybe it's all in the syntax rather than actual lies. You know, people are just embellishing rather than, you know, lying outright. One thing I found was interesting was when she said she met like 15 women online. After several weeks of online banter, she found like some people that she obviously got on with. Two of them kind of disappeared as soon as they found out she was a smoker. Well, why didn't she disclose that information?
Yeah.
You know, that's obviously... an issue for some people, you disclose that information up front.
Yeah. Well, that's probably one advantage that meeting somebody in a night spot would have above meeting somebody online. All of your revolting habits would be quite obvious to them right then and there.
Yeah. True. And the other one was she said that someone said no thanks after she sent through a photo. Don't you normally have a photo up on these sites?
No, you can do either.
You can have like a question mark or something. Not that I know.
In the interest of full disclosure, I think if you're going to meet someone, I mean, I would want to see what someone looked like. And understandably, anyone else is going to want to see what I look like if I start talking to them. If you're up front, there's not going to be that kind of problem where they go, they just might not speak to you in the first place, which is fine.
Yeah. But if you expect full disclosure, you should fully disclose. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, and it's funny because then she went on to put an advert in a newspaper as well.
I find that a bit more dubious, the newspaper thing.
Well, she thought because it was a serious newspaper, you know.
Like what?
I don't know.
What's a serious newspaper in Australia?
But then...
She said she likes hiding behind her like little... paper box or something.
Yeah.
With no puns there.
I'd think freak at that point.
Well, it was interesting because the people that she met, she didn't like on there either. She didn't like one woman because she was bisexual. She didn't like one woman because she was late in coming out. She didn't like another one because she was a bit of a greenie, a vegan. She didn't like that. And then some of her friends tried to set her up with someone and she didn't like that girl. She said she was actually really nice and things like that, but she didn't like her job, so she couldn't see them being together. I don't think the problem is with online dating here. By the looks of things, we've tried three methods of dating, and the only common problem has been this person.
I think so, too.
Nicola, powerful words.
Yep, hard-hitting news here on Hear Me Roll.
What if we've had a text in, Nicola?
Oh, have we?
Yes, darling.
Oh.
Can you read it for us?
I can.
Thank you.
Someone's saying, I don't get it. In this day and modern age, why are women and the homo community globally treated so poorly? It still appears that in some countries, it's a narrow-minded man's world. From one not happy poof, Lonnie. Great show.
Hi, Lonnie.
Thank you, Lonnie.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's true. It's still kind of hard to believe when we're in Australia, where, you know, there's a few things that bug us, you know, in terms of inequality. You do kind of forget that other people are still at step one.
Yeah. Mm. But you think about it, like, in the whole scheme of, you know, recent history, we have come in leaps and bounds, you know, in our lifetimes. Okay, my short lifetime. But in my short lifetime, women in the Middle East, like, you know, 20 years ago, there was no internet for the public. 20 years ago, there wasn't, you know, a Lebanese lesbian news site. So, I mean, there are positive changes every day, and I'm sure that there will just be more to come.
Oh, positive words again.
Speaking of positive changes.
And positive move forward. Let me say this, thank you.
Okay, Tess wants to break the news.
Angelina Jolie, Gia, gorgeous, straight to TV movie, no idea why that happened.
Really,
it was straight to TV,
You're joking.
Yeah.
Joking.
It's the tale that follows the supermodel Gia. What's her surname again? Karan Gia. Anyway, gorgeous model who then unfortunately dies from a drug overdose at the age of 26. But anyway, she has lots of like little lesbian encounters throughout the film.
Oh, she's in love with one woman in particular.
Yeah. Yes. Well, but that woman leaves her, so she has several encounters through the film. They're releasing a high definition, uncut, you know, previously cut scenes, now uncut. They're releasing it again.
Angelina Jolie having lesbian sex.
Yeah.
This is the highlight.
I was so excited just then. It didn't make any sense at all.
No. But never mind.
It doesn't matter because we could see your face and you were just going,
Well, yeah, I mean, that's quite exciting. I mean, the actual news post says Angelina bears all for some girl-on-girl action. I mean, that's something that's going to catch your attention straight off. But, I mean, it could be a lot of hype. It could be like... you see a bit more boob in one particular scene or something.
Probably see nipple for longer.
But you know,
a body nipple though. Probably not Angelina's nipple.
I'm willing to take the chance. You know, I'm going to buy it anyway because, you know, that's
supporting the movie industry, you know.
But you know, what other ones...
Is that what you call it?
What other movies would you remake though? That's what got into my head. If I could remake movies with extra uncut sex scenes in high definition now and with more liberal attitude that we have, what ones would I remake? It's something that I've been pondering.
Good evening. This is Hear Me Roar and my name is Sue. I'm here with the lovely Tess and Nicola. Tonight in the studio, we're talking to Anne Hunter and she's the co-founder and current secretary of PolyVic, Melbourne's polyamorous community. It's a really interesting discussion already because we've been talking for hours about polygamy and polyamorous and it'd be really good to clarify some of the discussion points, I guess, that we came up with, because you're going to go into... we're going to talk about swinging and cheating and all the issues associated with polyamory. So welcome to Hear Me Roar.
Thank you, Sue. Lovely to be here.
Now, just to start off, how do you identify?
I identify as bisexual and polyamorous.
Okay.
All right, and how exactly would you describe a polyamorous relationship? And it's... I know there are probably multiple facets in which the relationships can form, but basically...
Yeah, it comes from the root words poly, meaning many, and amor, meaning love. So it is the practice of honest, open, ethical, multiple relationship where everybody is aware of what's going on and consenting partners.
I think maybe many people just presume that... when I think polyamorous, I think three people, just because that's probably where my mind can stretch to. And I think a triangle relationship. Does it always happen in a triangle with, you know, all three people?
No, not necessarily. It depends on a whole range of things. One of the wonderful things about poly, for me particularly, is that it enables you to ask yourself, what works for me? What do I really want? And the answers to that are as varied as the poly people in the community. So the setups that you get, the structures and the constructs, vary wildly. Some of the common ones are what we call a V, where you have person A in the middle who has a relationship with persons B and C, but they don't have a relationship with each other, or not an intimate or sexual relationship. Or a triad is, we would call it a triad, where it's a triangle, where all people are involved with each other. What you often get is lines of V's hooking up, so we often call that a W. So,
I'm
for example...
Already.
Well, okay. So, for example, I have a partner who lives a couple of hours away with his other partner who has another partner. Now, I'm bisexual, but she's not, and she and I are not in a sexual relationship. We're good friends. We get on well together. We often, you know, she sleeps at my place when she comes to Melbourne and so on, but we're not in what you would call an intimate relationship.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So what was your journey in the polyamorous world? How did
I get into it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, even once you're there, like, it can be hard enough in the gay community as a lesbian to find another lesbian and then, you know, like one another.
How do you find poly people?
How do you find people that...
Why do you think we started PolyVic?
Social group, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. My own personal journey was that I was straight, married, Christian, all that sort of stuff. And it so didn't work for me. And I had fallen in love with the man I have been in a relationship for now for 16 years. I had fallen in love with him before that. And, you know, we'd done the good thing about not getting together and not having an affair and not having sex and all that sort of stuff. And then the emotional connection was so strong that it turned out to be way stronger than either of our marriages. And we really tried to make it work. To not see each other, and we couldn't. We kept bumping into each other and various things. And so when I came out of that situation, I was horrified that I couldn't keep my vows, because integrity is very important to me. And I'd never wanted to make a promise to somebody that I couldn't guarantee I could keep. And the other thing was that relationship gave both of us so much joy, and I would never want to restrict myself or my partner from something like that that gave them so much joy. So I didn't have a word for it at all. I just knew that I did not want to promise monogamy ever again. And I wanted to be free to let relationships find their natural position, their natural limit, their natural balance. So, for example, I have two people that I consider to be life partners that I make plans with, that I, you know, that I am in contact with daily, that I expect to be partners with for the rest of my life. I have other people who are occasional lovers. I have other people whom I don't have sex with, but I will crawl into bed naked with and cuddle and talk about anything. You know, so it's that another form of intimacy and the kind of relationship you would not get in monogamy.
So for you, almost don't even have a boundary to where your poly might end, or do you think you do?
Like, time is the limiting factor. In fact, if you talk to experienced polyamorous people, time management is actually one of the big problems.
I can believe that. I've got one partner and that is enough for me. I'd be exhausted, I think, trying to have any more than one person in my life. And
that is actually often what stops people. We've had people come into the community, go, woohoo, this is me, and then just not be able to manage it. Because if it takes X amount of time to manage one relationship, it's often X squared to manage two.
So, Anne, how does it actually work? How does your dynamic work with your two long-term relationships? How do you make it happen on a day-to-day basis?
Well, as I said, one of my partners lives a lot of the time 2 hours away with his other partner, and one of my other partner is further away than that. So what I tend to do is have blocks of time with them. This is just what works for me and them. So I've got my other partner's coming for a couple of weeks next week, and then I will be very focused on him in particular. You know, at other times, there are other times when I'm actually completely on my own. So really what it comes down to is negotiating. We call it the poly mantra. Communicate, communicate, communicate. And if all else fails, communicate.
Yeah, I mean, honesty must just be the key, because there's no point in... I mean, you know, I think in most relationships, you sometimes hold back things that you want to say to your partner to protect them from feeling jealous or angry or sad.
Or to protect you from their reaction.
From their reaction.
Yeah. You don't get much protection.
It's challenging.
It is challenging.
And you classify yourself as bisexual, but you've got two male long-term partners.
Yes.
How do women fit into your life?
Well, I did actually have three people I considered to be life partners, one of whom was the wife of one of my current partners. And I actually was attracted to her first. But we met on the internet, and we were very impressed by each other's responses to people who would ask questions or talk about issues on the poly sites and things like that. And what was interesting was that for me, I mean, when I set eyes on her, I just had this instant click, you know, really instant connection. And we had a lot in the intellectual and background and psychological understanding and a whole range of things like that. And I didn't actually have much impression at all of her husband, my now partner, because he never said anything. But he and I touched and just had this kinesthetic connection that was astonishing and still is.
And you, I guess as a poly person, you're open to that.
Yeah. The point is, I don't shut those things down.
It's wonderful, and it seems kind of limitless, but it must just also be a lot, so much for the mind to take, because walking through your world, looking at the world through your eyes, there are virtually no love constraints.
Well, no, that's not true. Various people set their own boundaries. I mean, the whole point is you've got to work out what works for you. Mm. So a common way in is that people set very clear boundaries. I have to know about it beforehand. I have to approve of the person. Never in our house or our bed or our, you know. People will set a whole range of boundaries that work for them. What you often find is that over time, people relax the boundaries because life doesn't you know, doesn't work that way. So the boundaries people set are often to help themselves, to enable themselves to feel secure as they move into it. As they get to feeling secure and they know their partner's not going to leave them for someone else, they tend to relax.
Because I was reading the book you kindly lent me, and it was called The Ethical Slut, written by, is it
Dossie? Dossie Easton.
I didn't know whether Dossie or Dossie.
Dossie, yeah.
And Catherine List.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting, and it was saying that there were actually more boundaries in a polyamorous relationship than a monogamous relationship, because there had to be that consultation, discussion, and it was my bed, but not my bed, and that house, but not that house. And
often true. Mm. I find for myself with my partners, particularly the one I've been in a relationship with for 16 years, we have virtually no limits on each other, like, you know, other than honesty. And we know we love each other and we trust each other. But it's very common, as I said, early on, to need a lot more boundaries and to need a lot of negotiation about the boundaries.
Yeah, I mean, the communication just strikes me as one of the wonderful aspects of poly, because you can talk about all of these things. And I think sometimes maybe in monogamous relationships, you meet somebody, you start going out, you commit to one another, and then there's suddenly this unwritten rule book about one's behaviour.
That's what I sprung when I got married. I was appalled. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, you are signing a contract that you haven't even read, really. Mm. It should, these
and
things
it's everybody
seem to
else's
be just coming to one innately rather than, you know, practices that you've actually discussed with your partner. Seems to be a list of, you know, behaviours in the relationship that just should be, and you just should know that you just shouldn't do that and that is not appropriate. Communication seems to lack.
Yeah, and one of the things that we consider a real win is we've had this happen quite a few times where, as I said, people will come in, quite often married couples will be looking at, you know, broadening their relationship. They'll see polyamory, they'll think it's terrific, they'll love it, they'll try it out, they'll fall flat on their faces. And they'll go back to monogamy with a much deeper sense of commitment and understanding, and it'll be conscious. And we think that's great. Polyamory is not for everyone. It is. We're going to make a film about it once called Not for the Faint-Hearted.
And it wouldn't be. It wouldn't be. We were having this discussion before, and we were saying that a lot of men in the studio were saying, yeah, it's great, fantastic, no worries. It's kind of a normal, natural part of their life within the GLBTIQ, but there are a lot of the girls who are going, oh no, no, I don't even want to try, because I know I'd have issues of jealousy and trust and all that sort of stuff. So jealousy is a big one.
Yep.
How do you cope with jealousy? Has there been a learning curve for you?
I'm lucky. I'm one of those rare people who was just born without the jealousy gene for some reason. I don't understand why. I just don't get jealous, really. But my long-term partner, yes, he really struggled with it. And he, to the point where I actually thought it was going to split us. It was, he was comfortable with himself, engaging with other people, but the moment I did, that was a real problem. And of course, as a woman, my God, that pisses you off. So we had to do quite a bit of work on it. There's a fabulous article by a woman called Kathy Labriola, which gives a sort of a desensitising process for jealousy, and he worked on that, and it really worked for him. It's quite intensive. Basically, you imagine your partner going out on a date, right from getting dressed and getting ready for it to being met at the door, or, you know, picking someone up or whatever, and going out and having dinner, and you go through the whole thing, going back, going having, you know, going to bed, having sex, falling asleep, waking up, having breakfast, leaving. And you rank your jealousy responses, your internal responses, on a rating of 1 to 10, 1 being the easiest to cope with and 10 being I just can't. And then you sit with the ones and you just sit with them. You start with something really easy, you sit with it until you can cope with
it. Until it dissipates.
Yeah.
We've got some texts come in. True, we have come a long way in regard to what Tess was saying before, in that the GLBTI community has come a long way. We must fight for women and gays' rights and equality. A woman was fined in a different country for wearing pants. It's outrageous.
Oh.
Outrageous.
Look, at same time, you know, I think some of the clothes that I've got in my wardrobe, if I wore them again, I should probably find myself.
Well,
so
we are going to start
there
that.
There are crimes against humanity.
I second that motion.
I third it. No, it never third. Now, Virginia Woolwhistle called in to ask just exactly what was the job that caused the person earlier to not want to go out with someone. Is she being way too picky? Yes. Was it a lack of cash, or was the job offensive, or what? Nicola, she needs to know.
All right, so earlier on we've been talking about a woman who'd been going on lesbian dating sites and things like that, trying to meet someone, and then she'd actually met someone she quite liked, but she rejected her on the fact that she worked laying.
She claimed to be.
One of her friends on her behalf claimed that she was a civil engineer. When she met the girl, she really, really liked her, but then found out that the girl actually laid tarmac on roads, and she didn't. The person who was trying to date didn't feel that, you know, she could see a yellow fluorescent vest hanging up in her hall and muddy footprints around the house.
No so good. That was well, that's yeah, rough on her behalf, but at least it was a friend that glorified the job rather than... I mean, it wasn't even glorifying it. It was just saying a completely different career. That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Yeah. Oh, flash.
Flash. Tonight, we're going to continue our discussion with Anne Hunter about a polyamorous relationship. And before that song, which is beautiful from Sarah Blasco, new album, lovely, gorgeous, we're talking about jealousy. Mm. Now, it's such a broad subject. Could you go and tell us more about your experience with jealousy?
Yeah, well, jealousy, what the word is often applied to a cluster of emotions. And one of the things that we find in the poly community that's really useful is to break it down and work out, you know, it could be like envy. You're having fun and I'm not, and I wish I was. Or it could be, I'm worried you're going to leave me for someone else. Or it could be, I'm not as good as the person, you know, I feel insecure about myself. Or there's a whole range of things that it could be. So, again, communicate. We find it's one of the things that comes up all the time in the discussion groups that we run. What we encourage people to work out what it really is that they're actually feeling and express that. And then when you break it down into small chunks, it's a lot easier to deal with.
Mm. Because to discuss polyamory from the outside can be quite easy and quite inspiring and great to think about.
It sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. But to actually think about your partner sharing their body and their love with somebody else is sometimes just too much to handle.
Yeah.
Do you find that people that experience that, because I'm sure that would be a huge proportion of the community that like the idea of being able to share themselves around, because let's face it, you know, we're mammals. I don't think it's innate to be, I don't believe monogamy is innate. I think it's learned. For those people that do like the idea of polyamory, kind of get to the forefront and then realize that they just cannot handle that sick feeling in their stomach, jealousy, whichever, you know, smaller emotion or lower emotion that actually is.
Yeah.
How do people sort of move forward from there?
It happens all the time. It's one of the biggest issues that comes up in the community. And a lot of people, as I said before, a lot of people who are trying it out stop at that point. Just go, no, I cannot do this. And we've seen people really try hard and not be able to do it. The people who manage to go through, one of the big things is accepting that it is your responsibility to deal with your own jealousy. One of the things that I found with my partner too was that I was a bit hard on him. I would just, like, you know, tell him to grow up and get over it. Mm. And actually, it was a really painful emotion. It was really horrible. And it took me quite a long time to really understand, because I haven't really experienced it. I didn't realise just how totally consuming it was.
Yeah.
And so at the same time that he was doing the desensitizing thing, I was learning to be gentle with him and to do things like, if I was going out to see someone else, I would really pour on the love beforehand and let him know I was not going away and I was coming back and I really loved him, and, you know, to do a lot of affirming. And a lot of people find that to be an important part of the process.
I actually find that quite hard, because I can imagine my partner leaving, going on a date, and they're saying they love me and want to come back, you know, and everything. They are coming back. And then they're going out to be on a date with somebody else. I would find that internally conflicting, because if you do want me and you do love me, why aren't you sharing my bed tonight? Why aren't you taking me out for dinner? Is that it?
Well, one of the things that we often say is, like, do you like fish? Do you like chicken? Do you have to choose just one? If you have fish one night, does that mean you have to have fish every night?
But that's more of an inanimate job object rather than somebody with an emotion.
Sure. But, okay, so then the way we put it is, the thing that I cannot get from partner A is partner B. And I can love partner A to the nth degree, but he or she isn't partner B.
But is that then saying that partner B isn't the right partner for you? I guess in a monogamous relationship, we would say that, you know, most of those boxes are ticked. But
there you go. People seem to expect that you probably want about 80%, and that should be enough. Okay, and the other 20% you should, you know, just cope with if you don't have. So you look around and you go, oh, 76, yeah, not bad. Oh, 78, And we say, and I say, and I affirm from my own experience, why do we need to choose? My heart is way big enough to love more than one person.
So, and on that, do you feel that you love your partners equally, or are they varying at times, at varying levels? You know, that day, oh, you really shit me, I don't really love you that much today. Or
they shit me all the time, of course. But
do you find that you love your partners equally?
I have a different kind of relationship with each of them, but I could not hierarchize or quantify the love. I love them. I know them. I trust them. I want to be in, you know, in their lives, and I want them to be in mine. I want to do things with them. I want to be with them. I want to make love to them. I want, you know, they are their own precious selves, and I couldn't say one's better or worse, or one's more important or less important.
Depends on what day and whether they've taken out the rubbish.
Yeah, that sounds like when people say with their kids, I don't really have a favourite. They so have a favourite.
Oh, look, certainly I like certain things about one and different things about another, that's for sure.
And it's been lovely talking to you. Do you have any advice for people who are considering a polyamorous relationship?
Yeah, don't do it to try and save a relationship that's not working. If you feel like you can, you have the heart to love more than one, and you are willing to encourage your partner to love others as well, I would say don't try and do it alone. Get a community around you, talk to people, read up on it, go online, look for people. It is hard to do on your own. It is hard. We did it on our own. It was really hard.
And that's what Polyvic is. And how can people get in touch with Polyvic?
Yeah, you can look for one of the best ways of looking up polyamory in general is just going to polyamory.org.au, and Polyvic is polyvic.org.au.
And a good read is definitely The Ethical Slut. I can definitely put
can
that one for
that.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you very much, Anne, for coming in.
Thanks.
That was a really interesting segment. We're going to have lots of discussion about that and maybe a beer, I think. Joining us in the studio is a lovely Gabby. Hello, Gabby.
Good evening.
Gabby's sitting in learning all about Hear Me Roar, which is really cool, and thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I have a question. Are you ready?
Wait, 2 seconds. Is this a quiz question? Because I could probably organise buzzers.
Yeah, get some buzzers. Use their nipples. Anyway, I've got friends who listened to a recent podcast, and I introduced two guests as Hello Ladies. And she was seriously offended by the term ladies. And I wanted to open that up for discussion.
Sorry, that's awful.
I wanted to open that up for discussion because I know that when I walk into a shop with a lesbian partner, and we obviously look a bit lesy, as you can tell, and they say, hello, ladies, I actually don't like it because I hear hello, lesbians. I personally find that funny.
But really? But you're ladies.
I know. It's hello, ladies. They don't go, hello, hello husband and wife, or hello couple, do they? Or hello lady and man.
I can understand that women might be offended when you say hello guys, because guys has become sort of a universal term in recent years for women and men.
Yeah. Sorry, I just got punched. Oh.
But,
and it hurt.
But saying ladies is offensive, oversensitive, I think.
Yeah, no, the one I think there's always someone going to be offended by whatever term you use. For example, woman. Lots of people don't like the term women because it has men in it.
Yes.
So they sometimes spell it with a Y.
Well, I know personally I wouldn't want to be called Hello Fellas. If I walked in with my partner and they said Hello Fellas.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would probably be much more offensive. Hello Lads.
Oh, hello, if you steered away from using terms at all and you said Hello You, that's the rudest of all.
It is, it's interesting. So then I had the whole week trying to work out, well, what would I say instead? And obviously the alternative would be, if you know them by name, you say Hello Anne and Catherine, or hello whoever.
Mm.
But if you don't know them and you're, you know, do you say hello ladies?
Hello you big muff diver.
You would.
Well, yeah, if I knew them probably. Not if I was working in a store, I'd be like worst employee ever. In fact, people like us would be in radio shows around the world reading out a story about the rude shop assistant who said hello muff divers to these lesbians and then got sued.
We would. That would totally be one of our current affairs segments.
It would.
Oh, stories. We need to do that and see what happens. We can't do that in our workplace. That
would be quite wrong.
Look, I think that ladies is actually... Well, I don't know. I was taught that that's the polite term to use, as is sir. Hello, yeah. Oh, no.
Gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen. Yeah, I was like, sir. Plural of sirs.
Sirs. Sires. I don't know. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
Well, I don't mind being called ladies, but I would never say hello, ladies, to anybody.
At all?
No.
So when you're introducing two people to somebody else or... And you're saying, hello, who? And you don't know their names.
I usually don't know people's names.
So how would you introduce them?
I'd get someone to... well, people who know me would generally introduce people to me 20 times because they know I forget.
You see, you wouldn't even do it with an eyebrow raise, that kind of, hello, ladies.
Never. See, that's yucky. But I think ladies, the word ladies is a beautiful, like you, Tess, it's a beautiful word.
Yeah. It actually, it kind of, it's quite titillating. It sort of flows. Ladies.
What about m'lady?
M'lady.
I would never say that.
Penelope.
Do you know what I would say girls. So I was going out with a group of my friends. I'd say, I'm going out with the girls.
Yeah, that's right.
I wouldn't say going out with the ladies.
Well, no, I would.
Sounds a bit dirty, that.
But girls, people can find condescending, you know, like you're speaking to a
youth.
Yeah.
Youths.
I like it. Makes me feel younger.
Yeah. I like girls. It's an interesting one, isn't it? So we might go away and have a discussion about that.
Ponder that.
Or over a pint.
With the ladies.
With the ladies.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.